Hi, I'm Natalie Gochner. You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. We are talking about political issues, public affairs, things that impact the state of Utah. I represent the political center and have on the political left, Shireen Gourvani. Welcome, Shireen.
Hello, and hi to our listeners.
And on the political right, Dan McKay.
Good morning, everyone.
So we've got to talk about Kamala Harris, selected by Joe Biden as her running mate. The news hit Salt Lake City yesterday. We're recording this on Wednesday, but I don't know, mid-afternoon. When I heard it, I was, you know, she was not my top choice, but I also totally got it. And the only thing I could think of is about the debate happening in Salt Lake City on October 7th and how this Senator Harris will eat Vice President Pence's lunch. That's my prediction, Shireen, and it's because she is such a smart, forceful, impressive
debate.
Woman.
Yeah. Yeah. This is, I feel like it's, I thought everyone kind of knew this, that this is where we were going. So it was exciting to see it finally announced. I feel like there are some really exciting things about her background and record. And I think in particular, as you mentioned, just her doggedness when it comes to questioning, her persistence. She serves on the Judiciary and Intelligence Committee, so I think she's got some really good, powerful places that she sits in the Senate that make her a strong vice president. And really, she's ready to lead. She ran for president. I don't know that her campaign picked up the steam that it really needed to. Obviously, we saw that as she dropped out before the Iowa caucuses. But there's no doubt that this is a person who is qualified, who is ready to step in and lead this country. And I think that is something that should bring everyone a sense of both excitement, but also just that sort of opportunity to renormalize what's happening in our government.
Dan, did the pick at all surprise you? Do you think it's a strong pick? Do you agree with me that she's a strong debater and it'll be an impressive moment in Salt Lake City political history?
Yeah, I can't wait for that debate because I think that's going to be very interesting for a lot of reasons. But you have a very strong, you know, former governor as vice president, you know, Pence, and then you've got a strong female U.S. senator with experience. It'll be a great debate. And honestly, that's the one I'm probably looking forward to seeing the most.
Well, and let's remind our listeners, it's their only formal debate.
Yeah,
correct?
That's right.
Yeah.
So I will say I am a little bit surprised by the pick, but I mean, just a little bit. And the only reason I'm surprised by the pick is, you know, a few weeks ago, and I can't remember how long ago that was, but I'll say a few weeks ago, Joe Biden's campaign was talking about how important this vice presidential pick is to be a head nod to the future of the Republican Party. And what I think is interesting, and I'm a little surprised to hear from Shireen that she's happy about the pick, because on the progressive side of the world, Kamala Harris is not their pick, right? And I think if you were the rest of the Democratic Party, now most of them are busy rioting and that kind of stuff, so maybe they're distracted.
Yeah, completely
at the
untrue. But what Kamala Harris represents is an important constituency, which is Black women who've been the backbone of our democracy.
Kamala Harris's biggest problem is that she is a return to what has always been there for the Democratic Party, and it's just more consistency or kind of a doubling down on what they have. There are some who kind of yesterday were reporting that this is like Mitt Romney picking Paul Ryan in some ways, that they're, you know, ideologically very similar, that they look at things very similar. And so I'm a little bit surprised that the progressive side of the party is not really frustrated with the pick. And if they are, maybe they just aren't saying anything.
It's interesting because you're undercutting as
your,
well. The talking
yeah,
points.
I hear
the,
your,
oh, go ahead.
Well, I just want to hear your feedback on that. But I also, I just want to toss in from the political middle that most people view Vice President Biden as a transitionary president if he's elected because of his age. And many people speculate that he would be a one-term president if he is successful. And so the commentary I read was basically saying that Joe Biden just picked the future of the Democratic Party because if he's successful. And so to me, that's part of Dan's point is that Biden just signaled the direction of a more moderate rather than extreme Democratic Party. So let's get Shireen's response.
So I'm interested in this in take on it. And certainly there's criticism from her record as an attorney general, as a district attorney in San Francisco, that maybe would fall not on the most progressive end of the spectrum. I also think at this moment, we're looking for candidates. We are looking for leadership at that level that can bring more people in and bring more people together. If you don't think that matters, look at what's happening as the current president is tearing this country apart. I think this is an opportunity to really bring people together, find some consensus. And Kamala Harris's entire argument for her candidacy for president was that she wanted to be the person who was addressing those issues that just bugged you day to day, that kept you up in the middle of the night. She's a very practical person. I think she takes a very practical approach to politics, and that matters. I also think that the question of giving a very serious nod to what has been the absolute backbone of Democratic politics in this country, in recognizing the power of Black women, is a moment that we should all recognize. And I think it's an important moment in what's happening in this campaign.
Very important. It's going to be fun to watch this. Let's transition to what President Trump did this week. I guess it was late last week, signing the executive orders. This is Congress that failed to act so far on a stimulus. As a professional economist, I'll just remind Dan and Shireen, our listeners, the U.S. economy is truly moving sideways right now. It's not progressing. The PPP has largely run its course. The extra unemployment insurance has expired. People in commercial real estate are bracing right now for what they fear may be a wave of defaults on retail projects, hotels, convention centers. There's a lot of concern. And we've got a Congress that has not acted. Ben McAdams has been very critical of Congress in this regard. President signs executive orders. I'll just give you a quick numbers. House Democrats, they passed the HEROES Act. This is over a month ago. $3.4 trillion was their proposal. Senate Republicans have been at about $1 trillion, and President Trump's executive orders, if they happened, and there's a lot of legal questions, would be $400 billion. So we got $3.4 trillion on one end and $400 billion on the other. Dan, we have to figure this out, and quickly.
Well, clearly, Congress is doing the one thing they do well, which is blame each other and blame everybody else. And so we have that going for us. And it's, I mean, executives are constantly in this role where they would love to act. And we have seen presidents in the past, we've seen the increase of influence of executive orders. And I think President Trump is inspired by that and has taken that as his presidency. And so here he is with an executive order because Congress can't find a way to act. You have a mixed house in the legislature, in the federal delegation or federal legislature. You've got the House that is under Democrat control, and you've got a Senate that's under Republican control. And the fact that they can't decide to do anything as the virus is kind of tapering down, you know, at least as far as its economic influence, and the fact that they can't come to some, you know, conciliation, I get it, because they honestly don't know how to run the country together. So, you know, why would we trust them to do anything else? The president, on the other hand, is proving to be a grown-up in the room and is just saying, well, if I can't get Congress to act, let's see. And the only way really for, you know, Congress or somebody else would be to try and, you know, sue the president and say that his $400 billion stimulus package or, you know, COVID package isn't constitutional. I'm not sure a person who filed that litigation would really find themselves very popular. If for all intents and purposes, the Trump plan is really interesting, though, because it has a requirement that if the states, you know, if states want the additional $400 for people above and beyond unemployment insurance, that they have to match it. And that there's a, I think it's a 75-25 match, which is
$300 would come from the federal government and $100 per week would come from the state government.
Yeah, that's a better way of saying it. I was talking in percentages, but you're right. It's $300 from the federal and $100 from the state. And Governor Herbert has been very smart, I think, is saying, well, we're interested, but let's find out what the strings are attached, because what we found as a state is the strings that were attached to some of the early PPP money was very concerning. And we ended up having a lot of negotiation with the federal government over those conditions. And so we're kind of doing the same thing with this additional unemployment money.
And in that time,
Shireen, what was your read on the executive orders?
Well, and I think it's important to note that in that time, the assistance has been cut off to families, many who were relying on that to make rent, to put food on the table. And it's put families across this country in real jeopardy. I think these executive orders are ridiculous. I'm very concerned that putting this burden back on the states, forcing them to bring that extra money in a time when many states are facing economic crisis is cruel. I also don't understand the deferral of the payroll taxes. That's just going to have to be paid back. Many business owners are saying they're just going to continue to collect them instead of slapping that back on people down the road. And I think it has a large potential. I mean, he's saying if he gets reelected that he'll just forgive that. Well, that's really jeopardizing programs like Social Security. It's very concerning to me, and I don't think that it's an effective plan.
Yeah, this is the problem in a pandemic. And I go back to this idea that nobody looks good in a pandemic because there are no good options. And, you know, the Trump has proposed a temporary cut in payroll taxes. You know, Shireen mentions businesses may not even do it. And the payroll tax is what pays for Medicare and Social Security. And they're already, you know, facing insolvency. So no good choices. Hey, let's wrap up this segment. In the next segment, I want to talk about Pac-12 and college football. So stay tuned, listeners. I'm with Dan McKay and Shireen Gurbani. I'm Natalie Gochner.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on KCPW. For more episodes of all our in-house podcasts, click on the Local Programs tab at kcpw.org. And while you're there, please consider donating to KCPW to support public radio in your community.
Shireen Gurbani on the left.
Dan McKay on the right.
Natalie Gochner in the Political Center. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. We want to talk about Pac-12 football or the lack of it. But before we do that, I thought I'd just mention a few things on the Ben McAdams, Burgess Owens race. We had Vice President Pence this week in Mesa, Arizona, I guess speaking at an event that had some ties to something called Latter-day Saints for Trump. Sean Reyes is someone who's a part of that group. Congressman Labrador from Idaho, someone who a lot of Utahns know. But Burgess Owens, also part of that. It turns out that a GOP super PAC has made a massive ad buy in the McAdams-Owens race. This is coming from the Congressional Leadership Fund. It's closely linked to House GOP leadership. It really looks like Ben McAdams is going to have his hands full with Burgess Owens. And I thought I'd love to hear from you, Dan and Shireen, on what you're seeing there.
My favorite was in this race a couple of months ago, everybody, or even last month, and it might have even been last week, but everybody was reporting, you know, hey, you know, Congressman McAdams has this huge money lead. He's going to be just fine. You know, those kind of the posturing that the very liberal leaning Salt Lake Tribune is kind of reporting. And then you had, you know, then a poll comes out early end of last week that showed like they were in a dead heat really for the win, and at both like 35% and then a bunch undecided, right? Which doesn't surprise anybody who pays attention to the CD4 race that it's a dead heat and it will be close all the way down to the wire, regardless of how much money Burgess Owens spends, it's going to be a close race. So then it's, you know, I'm sure Burgess will have a strong fundraising quarter and you will see the race very tight right up to the end. And this is going to be a neck and neck race. This is the race we're going to be watching for years. I mean, it's just going to keep going on. And my hat is off to Congressman McAdams. He jumped into a race that he knew every 2 years he was going to be fighting tooth and nail to win. And so, and this is going to be no exception. It really doesn't matter at the end of the day who his opponent is. It's going to be a tooth and nail fight. In this situation, I do think Burgess Owens is a more formidable candidate than people realize.
I also think what Congressman McAdams has shown is that in his experience as the county mayor and certainly in the last 2 years is that he is a bridge builder. He is a person who's working to represent a very a very purple, if not red, right, district, working to build community, to build relationships, and delivering for his constituents. And I think people will continue to see that. I'm not sure what the message is of the Owens campaign, but I understand and can see and can point to many examples where Congressman McAdams has reflected the, I would say, sort of political spirit of the 4th District and has really worked to create and continue to have strong relationships here and work on behalf of his constituents. I think we would all be better served if we had representation in Congress that did that, even in a Congress that doesn't seem to be able to get much done.
This ad was brought that, to you and supported by the Ben McAdams campaign. I just want to let everyone know we should run that little flyer right at the end because FEC guidelines, if Shireen is going to run a commercial, she has to do it right in the middle. So, yeah, that well done.
So you're doing the same thing for Owens, let's be clear, right? I mean, did you want to put that disclaimer on yours?
No, I thought it was balanced. No, come on, I was balanced. I talked about how, you know, Ben signed up for a hard race. You know, he had some of these things, but the money's going to be tight. I thought it was pretty balanced.
So do you disagree that he's really trying to represent what is a mixed district? I mean, it really is. And I think that that's a difficult position to be in. I think he does it well.
And what I've seen from Burgess Owens is he's on the conservative talk show parade. He was on Laura Ingraham's Fox News channel Monday talking about how the cancellation of college football is, quote, a handprint of the radical left. And, you know, we got the news this week that not only the Big Ten, but now the Pac-12, is not going to play college football. I'd love to hear, Shireen, your comments. You work at the University of Utah. You're involved with a lot of facilities. You understand campus and the environment of game day. What does this mean to the local economy? And mostly, what does it mean to, you know, student athletes and the community of interest here for U of U football?
Yeah, I think it's a really, I mean, I will say in a broader context, I was looking at the statements that were coming out from the players, the kinds of things that they wanted to see in terms of their safety. If those can't be met, then I think this is really the right decision. You're looking at people who are hoping to go pro. They could be exposed to COVID-19, have ongoing health conditions that really prevent them from the kind of professional success that they would like to have. I would not want to put students in that kind of a situation, and I'm sure that they don't want to be in it either. And it's also really unfortunate that we're here. I mean, we're here because we did not get this virus under control when we needed to.
Hmm. Dan, are you feeling any pain for the U not being able to play, or is it just sort of yeah?
BYU still playing? Does that matter to you, Dan?
I'm going to tell you that one, yes, I'm glad that there are schools that are still going to play. College football itself is more dangerous than COVID-19, and especially to those players, and especially to the long-term impacts. College football itself, like putting on a helmet and walking out on the field, is more dangerous to them and their future NFL careers than COVID-19
is. So are you anti-college football, Dan?
No, I love college football.
Okay.
And I don't love COVID, but I don't love canceling things that are, you know, kind of a key part of our, you know, society, that kind of thing. And it's really... I think it's sad, honestly. I think there are ways. The NBA is proving that it can be done. Major League Baseball is kind of muddling through its possibilities. Professional athletes turn out not to, you know, sequester themselves well. Who knew? But the college athletes, I think, have an environment that they can be captured, and they can honestly work, you know, and keep themselves in a better position to avoid the COVID deal. The COVID virus and pandemic, but they are much worse off by putting on football pads than they ever would by getting the COVID virus. And so
canceling this over COVID
and yet letting college football continue as a sport period, like, is mind boggling to me. But by all means,
this is such an interesting position.
Democrats,
that you're taking.
Cancel more stuff. Go ahead. Why not? I'm sure by the time everybody's sitting at home for the next 6 months, November, everybody's going to be super excited to support their position. And the only reason I say that is I can give Pac-12 a hard time. They're based in California and they have, you know, a couple of former, you know, key Democrat fundraisers that are running the Pac-12. And so I can just give them a hard time that way.
Okay. So I think what you're continuing to ignore, though, is that we really had a massive opportunity in this country to get coronavirus under control. And I would like to say that we are seeing really good numbers in Salt Lake, in Utah, Salt Lake County in particular, which I'm following closely. And we're just not in a situation where those student athletes feel safe.
Yeah. You know, I do, though, Dan, I like your point about managing risk. And, you know, there is something to be said that the goal here is not to eliminate risk, but just to manage it appropriately. And you make a really good point about the risks of injury and even long-term, you know, ongoing problems from playing football versus a virus that, I don't know, a big share recover without long-term problems. Hey, Shireen, I don't want to go unsaid what you just mentioned, though, that our cases have dropped below 300
it's
people.
Fantastic.
And that's the first time since early June that we've hit that. We had 263 new diagnoses on Monday. I credit that to mask wearing. I don't know what you're thinking, Shireen and Dan.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
Yeah. And Dan, now we got to get the positivity rate down. If we can get the cases to stay low and the positivity rate down, Utah will be back where I think we need to be. Hey, let's talk about the Salt Lake City police reforms. Mayor Mendenhall has had to deal with the Salt Lake Police Association pushing back on her policy reforms. One of the officers said, quote, "We reject the mayor's claim of racial and social disparities across all Salt Lake City agencies and institutions." Shireen, I'm going to go to you first because I've learned in my thinking about this that it's not just about people, but it's about structures and systems.
Yeah.
And his quote there is missing the structure and system point.
Yeah. So when we're thinking about racial bias and how it operates in our society, it is systemic, right? So we're looking at how it infiltrates large scale systems and creates disproportionate outcomes for people of color across our community. And it's troubling for me to read that when I've also attended a number of protests, in large part to listen to people from different backgrounds, a number of people of color in our community talk about their own experiences with law enforcement. We just had a horrific story in the paper about a gentleman who had a dog unleashed on him, grabbed his leg after he was on the ground, hands up. I don't know if you saw the article in the Trib documenting the experience, but the body cam footage is terrible. And they still released the dog on him. And the dog went after him, really chewed on his leg. And he it sounds like, has ongoing pain and nerve damage from that. Those are, of course, case in points. And it's hard to sometimes scale that out to what systemic problems look like. But I think if we're not willing to grapple with those, we're not going to be able to move forward on this issue.
Yeah. Dan, what do you read in the police association pushing back on the mayor?
Well, it's predictable, right? Mm-hmm. It is hard to make changes. And so, and recognizing that, you know, some changes would be helpful are understandable and are needed. So I'm not really sure that the police association response is terribly productive, other than they are highlighting what I kind of thought about the reforms as I've looked at them, is that there really is, you know, most of those things are already kind of in place, at least when, you know, you talk to the Salt Lake City police departments and their chief, you know, you've got it was really interesting. You have a Polynesian police chief standing up and talking about how racial issues and discrimination is not an issue within the Salt Lake City Police Department. And then you've got the police association and they're saying, hey, these measures really are already in place. You know, OK, I guess we can continue to do what we've always done. Stepping back, though, I think we can all look at ways of doing things differently constantly. And it is important for all of us to not dig in to positions. It is better for us to stop, look at some of these things objectively, and figure out how we can do them better. And that's what I'm hopeful that the association will be doing behind closed doors.
Hmm. Shireen and Dan, we have about a minute and a half left on the program. Dan, I wonder if you have a gripe or gratitude expression you want to share.
Yeah, I will say that today, you know, I've just been grateful for a lot of things, but the last couple, last few days or whatever, I've kind of spent more time just goofing around with my kids in the evening in the pool. And I've been super grateful for the amazing weather that we're having. And I love Utah. And I love the pictures that everybody's posting of summer in Utah and how amazing it is. So that's my gratitude today. I say we live in the most beautiful state, and everybody else proves it online. So thanks.
Yeah. Shireen.
So mine's a little different. I feel like while everyone was completely pumped about Hamilton being on Disney, I'm here for the Beyonce hour-long music video. So I'm going to recommend and just say, I'm grateful for Black is King. It was a beautiful piece of art, and it's really fun to watch.
Oh, that's great.
What's
transition.
Yours?
I'm going to go back to Dan. I was up in Albion Basin this weekend, Dan and Shireen. Lots of families, lots of guests to our state, out-of-staters, mountain runners. Felt a lot of inspiration there. We are so blessed. So let's just take that with all the political news and wish our listeners a very happy week. I've been with Shireen Gorbani and Dan McKay. The program's produced by Anthony Scoma. Thanks, everybody, for listening.